Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome to the podcast. This is Genuinely Grace. How are you doing? I've had one of those weeks, actually. I've had one of those weeks where I've not been asleep properly. I've had just stuff coming on. It's felt kind of odd this week. And there's been lots of Sober Club members that have just said they can't sleep either. So I don't know, maybe it's something to do with moon energy. It's also been results week, of course, in the UK as well. So if you've had a teenager with GCSEs, obviously last week was A-levels, and yeah, you know, the whole world knows about our issues around results, and I have a teenage son who did not do very well in GCSEs, and you know what, I'm bigging him up anyway. I did a post about it actually on Facebook, and it was such an amazing result. So many people realise that exams are not the only way to you know, succeed in life, and it really is much more about being confident and happy and all of the things that we talk about on this podcast. And I really hate this kind of one size fits all approach that people do. Anyway, I'm trying to say welcome to the podcast, and I got straight into that. but the one of the reasons that I kind of had that in mind is because two reasons really. One is that I'm going to be bringing you an interview, this week, but probably next week, with Jessica Huey, who all about finding your purpose. And again, you know, someone who didn't have the classic standard background, and yet just amazing success, incredible author, and she's just done the most just amazing work over the years. So I'm looking forward to bringing you that. And also, thinking of teenagers, I don't know if you saw the stuff in the papers this week. There was an ASA study, ASA study, which was talking about giving young people alcohol, and it said it can lead to binge drinking in later life. Well, no surprise there then. And then there was a big piece in the male and female, where they interviewed three defiant mothers who said, you know, why we let our children drink. And, you know, there's all the reasons in there that you would absolutely expect. Oh, we're getting them used to it. And no, I'm not worried about, you know, etc. I mean, I don't need to tell you what it said. I didn't even bother to read it in full. I just think it's so fascinating, this whole kind of idea of concept, really, that in the UK, we must get children used to drinking alcohol, because alcohol is what we do. Drinking alcohol is what we do. It's our cultural norm. It's our societal norm. It's the glue that sticks everything together. So, of course, we must get them used to it so that they don't abuse it. You know? And I mean, obviously, I was part of that, you know, part of that picture. Although I must admit, I've never, ever thought of that about kids. But I was part of the whole culture that thought that it was the societal norm, obviously, until I saw the light. I must admit, I've never thought that way about kids, though, ever. I think it's probably because I heard Eric Sigmund speak. Eric has been one of my guests on the podcast, as you know. If you didn't listen to that episode, go back and listen to it. It's fascinating. He really is just an interesting, really, really interesting guy, educational psychologist. And he has written a book called Alcohol Nation. It's quite an old book now, but he does talks in schools, and he says, look, just tell your kids, pewter says no. You know, it's really, really clear until you're kind of 21, 22. The brain's not even fully formed. So don't mess with it. Just don't mess with it. So anyway, so I just had all that on my mind thinking about teenagers. Anyway, I hope you're having a good week, but hopefully had a bit more energy going down than I have this week. And I've got great guests for you. We've teamed up with Wildlife Botanicals. They're another really great brand that's entered my Platinum Awards. I think some of you know that with my kind of natural living hat on, I do these Platinum Awards every year just to recognise the best and in sort of natural and organic products. And it just made absolute sense for me to have a category for alcohol-free drinks, because why would I not want to big that up? And it's just been so lovely that a few brands have entered. And what's great about that is that I get to kind of write about it in the stuff that I write for magazines or whatever. And also that I can share these great products with my lovely celeb judges, Joe Wood, Cary Grant, Glynis Barber. So they get to try these drinks at a time when they, you know, probably wouldn't otherwise necessarily think of it. So anyways, Wildlife Botanicals are an absolutely lovely, lovely brand and just gorgeous products. So we're going to be chatting to Ellie, the founder, and also you're going to be delighted to know that my guest is Sober Dave. Now, I interviewed Sober Dave, gosh, must have been a good year ago. I first met Dave when he came along to the events that I used to run. We did a kind of series of events called Self-Care and Sobriety at a little club in London. And I had some great guests. There were some really nice events, quite small, but really funky. And Dave came along when he was really only a few weeks into sobriety and kind of was a bit nervous as he stood there. But man, has he found his feet. And so many people follow Sober Dave on Instagram and he's doing some great work. So I thought it'd be great to bring you an interview with Dave, catch up on you know what's going on. So here he is.
I'm so thrilled that my guest is Sober Dave. Dave, I haven't spoken to you in a while. How's it going?
Hi, Janie. Yeah, it's been a while, isn't it?
It has been a while.
Yeah, it's funny. Someone commented on a post I did yesterday saying they'd just listened to our podcast.
And the one we did first, right?
Yeah, and I'd only been a few weeks sober then, hadn't I? So a lot's happened since then, I believe.
Yeah, it's been fabulous watching your journey because I remember meeting you when we did some events at the Jago way back. And I think, you know, that was, oh goodness, that was well over a year ago, wasn't it? And then, you know, to see your meteoric rise to fame and the way you've managed to just really, you know, get into people's hearts with the work that you do. It's brilliant. Let's just, for anyone who didn't hear that first podcast, let's just sort of go back, you know, maybe fairly briefly over your story and what got you to this point, and then we'll talk about the work that you do now.
Sure. As you say, we first met at the Jago, and that was I quite often talk about that. That was one of the first sober things that I did. And I was petrified walking up the stairs because I didn't know what to expect, because normally I have pre-drinks and whatever. And I met you, and I think Claire Pooley was there, the Rock Sober Boys. And I think, you know, when you first give up drinking, you often think, well, what is there without it? You know, what have I got in my life? And it's always the opposite, isn't it? So, and I met you, and I remember getting on the tube on the way back, and everyone was drunk, and it was like, wow, I really like this new life that I've began. And and then I carried on. Then I arranged an event, didn't I, in the Jago, and that's where you launched your amazing sober club.
Yeah, exactly. Goodness, that's almost a year ago, yeah. So I mean, for you, just talking again about that experience of first getting out there, you know, just back up a bit and tell us about your sort of drinking history, because I'm guessing that, you know, you were the kind of guy that probably, you know, went out and had a few beers. So actually to go to an event where no one was drinking would have really been a big thing. Just tell us a bit about what led to you choosing to ditch the booze.
Yeah, well, back in my day, you didn't need ID in a pub. So we quite often used to go into pubs at 14, 15.
Oh, God, so you started early.
Yeah, very early. And I would say that my early drinking days were relatively, if you can call them normal, you know, going out with the lads after football and clubbing and whatever. But it was when I got into my 30s and 40s that it started to change. And I started to drink indoors as well. And then I had a period in my life of living on my own for nearly 10 years. And I started to hit the drink big time, drinking up to a litre of vodka a night.
Wow.
Wine, beers, whatever there was available, you know. And then I met my now wife, Em. I was a handyman on a TV show. And we actually did our house on the telly. And we got together and... She didn't really know that I had a drinking problem. And I hid it well, you know, we hide it, don't we? And it was really quick how we got together, and I sold my house to move in where I am now.
Yeah.
And I kind of thought that I'd be able to address it before I moved in, but I didn't. And it was a few days before I told her that I've got a really bad drinking problem. And she could have easily said, well, you're not moving in, you know, and my house had already sold. So I moved in and I thought I could manage it. And gradually, craftily, I crept it into the house and whatever. And then it was after a few months that it really began to be a real problem at home as well, you know. And it came to a point where I just had a crossroads in my life. I thought, I'll either lose everything I've got here or I'll change. And there was no way I could ever moderate. So I knew that it had to be full sobriety. And it was just after Christmas. It was actually January 2019. A friend texted me and said, I mean, talk about timing. It was just literally at the right time. And he said, how would you like to join me giving up alcohol for 3 months and see where you are in your life, in your health, in your marriage? And I looked at it and I laughed. I was like, what are you talking about? I can't give up for 3 days, let alone 3 months. But it trickled in. And by the end of it, by the end of the day, I met him and shook his hand. And it was a few days after that, I thought, well, where am I going to be in 3 months? I'll be back at the pub doing the same thing, marriage in trouble. So I then decided that was it. And then I saw you online and your event and that. And that's when I went to that. And that sort of opened so many doors for me, you know, so many new people.
Yeah. It was never an option for you to sort of go a different route then, to go to the GP or to go to AA or Smart Recovery or any of those. I mean, had you thought about that at all?
Well, when I first gave up, a friend of mine was 3 months old when she went to AA, and I went to two or three meetings, and I began to realize actually it wasn't really what I wanted. It made me feel a bit depressed actually. So I think by coming to one of your events, I just fitted in more, you know. It is more of a more realistic for me in a way that you know, when I met the Rock Sober Boys, a couple of like bikers, you know, and they were just so lovely. And then I created my Instagram account and followed a few other people, and it was more of a sort of, I think, you know, that I always address it as discovery rather than recovery, because personally, the recovery word makes you feel like I'm ill.
No, I know exactly what you mean. There's so many words around the whole thing, aren't there, that that put people off. And you're right, it is discovery. It's that, it's the whole sober curious movement, isn't it? I think you have to be curious about everything that's going to be going on. So yeah, I like that. Yeah. Sorry, carry on. Yeah.
So I once I'd started, because I think that the common mindset, which stuck with me for a long time, was what is there? I was so ingrained in my drinking history that I didn't think there was anything outside it. But once I discovered these different things, it was like a whole new life for me, you know. It changed. And as you said in the beginning, watching it on the Instagram pages, I just do so many things now that I love. I was meant to be on a sober holiday a couple of weeks ago, but because of lockdown, it didn't happen. But things like that I would have never have dreamt of doing, you know. A holiday without drinking is ridiculous, you know. So,
yeah.
But now, there's so many things I love doing.
Yeah. Just for those people who are, you know, in those early weeks, or maybe they've, you know, done a few weeks and then slip back or whatever. You know, we walk this fine line, don't we, between being, you know, talking about these positive benefits all the time and really, you know, being hugely positive about this, because it is all positive, you know. And as I always say, we're not giving anything up, we're only gaining. But for those people who are in those early weeks, what do you remember? And are there any sort of tips, or is there anything you can share from those early weeks when it, you know, would have been hard for you? There's no two ways about it.
Yeah, of course. I mean, when I started, it was obviously January, so the weather wasn't blazing sunshine and that. But the first few weeks were okay, and I couldn't believe that I was on that journey, you know. But I think a big tip is to change your routine, because my typical routine would be to get in from work, open the fridge, and crack open a beer, you know, that old wine o'clock thing. And I forced myself to do different things. So I used to go for a long walk, or listen to a podcast, or read a quick lit book, or watch a film, go to bed early, just to change my routine and keep my mind occupied. And I think as well, positive mindset, changing the language around what you say to yourself, because if you start to say, oh, I could murder a glass of wine tonight, or I could really kill a beer, you're making an affirmation to yourself, aren't you? So if you can just reframe that a little bit and just say, well, look, I'm not, because I'm whatever it is, whether you're 30 days, you're going to give up 4, 60 days, 100 days. You know, there are times that are difficult, but it's getting through those difficult times that makes you stronger in the long run. So I just think positive thinking, and also, as we always talk about, is the day at a time. So it just doesn't seem too big a deal, you know, if you're just getting through that day and thinking, right, that's another day. Journaling's a good thing to do, putting down your feelings on paper. I did an IGTV thing the other day on my account, which was all the benefits of giving up drinking. And when I thought of the positives of drinking, there weren't any. It was
no,
the first
exactly. Part there. No, that's great, isn't it? It is great, because there genuinely isn't anything. I mean, usually now, I often ask people to sort of look at why they want to give up. And there's obviously a ton of reasons at the beginning. But then I ask them to sort of say, well, but what's stopping you? Why don't you? What's that little bit of you that doesn't want to give up? And it's never, you know, people never answer by saying, well, I just absolutely love the taste of drink, because no one actually does. It's usually just fear, isn't it, really? The fear of missing out. I mean, you mentioned that you came to you know, you came along to our event, and you know, you obviously mixed with people who weren't drinking, and you said you had one guy that encouraged you. What about your other friends and family members? Was it difficult for you at the beginning to tell everyone? How did you go about all of that? Because this is the stuff that can actually stop some people from even starting, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, we're all different. I've learned that, and there's some people that I think actually. Janie, you did it silently, didn't you?
I did. I mean, yeah. I wouldn't advise that by any means, but I certainly did. Right. And in a funny sort of way, I now look back and realize that actually that now makes me a better coach, because I was able to get away with it, in inverted commas, and I made absolutely no fuss. So nobody knew. So it was a nightmare for me, because I had no support, but it shows that it can absolutely be done. I did every social occasion. I, you know, even my family didn't realize, you know, my kids bought me wine on Mother's Day, my teenagers, you know, which is a bit heartbreaking actually. So I wouldn't recommend it, but you know, but it did work. I just absolutely didn't make a big deal out of it. But you know, again, is it harder if you're a guy who goes down the pub with your mates? Maybe that's just a complete stereotype. I don't know, but as you say, it's so different for everyone. And I'm just interested how you did you tell people, okay, I'm not drinking anymore, or did you say, oh, I'm taking Dry January off or whatever?
No, it's funny you ask, because I think in my experience, drinkers are all or nothing people. And I'm very much all or nothing. So I went the absolute opposite of you and shouted it to the world. You know, I went out with my megaphones and I'm not drinking anymore. But when it comes to my male friends, I found the best way to deal with that was to talk to them individually, you know, rather than actually go out in the group. And then they're saying, what are you talking about? You're not drinking. Here I shove a beer in my hand. I messaged them and told them separately. And I lost a lot of friends along the way.
Oh, did you? Know? Did you really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, in my age bracket, they're people that I've known for a long time, and they've, you know, I had a reputation for being a beer monster, you know. So they didn't actually believe it. And when they realised that I was serious about it, I was not invited to a lot of things. And but do you know what? I didn't really care.
Well, I'm going to say, I guess they weren't really the people you actually really wanted to hang around with when it actually came to it.
No, 100%. And so going on to like your social events where I met so many wonderful, and William Poulter was there, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I had some great guests, didn't I?
Absolutely. And I was listening to Richard Piper's talk from Alcohol Change the other day, and I've met him. So many amazing guests. You should try and bring them back, Janie,
because
that was such a good thing. But I realised that with all the people that are sober, or more moderate with their drinking, there's an incredible humbleness and genuineness about them that I love, you know, because one, you leave the evening and remember everything they've talked about, but two, they've been to a certain place you've been to, and it's almost like a rebirth, isn't it? It's like a whole new life, which I've certainly started, you know. It's coming up to 20 months now, and when I look back, not just physically. I mean, I look back at pictures of me a couple of years ago and I can't believe it. I look so unwell, so overweight in my face, and that's let alone what was going on inside.
Yeah.
For the opportunities that I've got now, every day I wake up looking forward to what will come my way in the day, you know, where before I'd wake up and I feel really negative and down and trapped.
Yeah absolutely, isn't it? That's what's so amazing, isn't it? I mean, I end up getting into this sort of happy positivity thing all the time. You can't not, you know. One of my clients said to me, I think I might have said this last week, but I just love it. She said, oh, I feel like I've been given a second chance at life. How cool is that?
Well, it really, really is. Because also, you probably say it, Janie, is that people are struggling in the beginning, just say to them, look, wind the tape forward. Where are you going to be if you do start drinking again? Or, you know, like, for me to start drinking again would just, well, I wouldn't. I just wouldn't. But it would be a catastrophe for me. I would lose so much. I've gained so much from getting rid of that horrible drug out of my life.
Now, I know another thing that you spoke about quite publicly in the early months were how it can sometimes be difficult with your partner, you know, when if they are not necessarily on exactly the same path, and no reason why they might need to be, by the way, but it can be difficult because, and I, you know, again, I have a lot of sober club members who will sort of say, well, I'm worried about what's going to happen to my relationship because we were drinking buddies, and you know, and that's what we did of an evening together. And it's one thing sort of telling your friends and maybe potentially changing your friends, but when it's your partner, it, you know, these dynamics can be tough, can't they?
Yeah, and there's that old thing of wine shaming, isn't there, when you're pure and you've given up drinking.
Don't you dare come to bed smelling of booze.
yeah but also I do think it's hard, isn't it, Janie, because there's also boundaries. I remember that right in the beginning she had a friend come over and they were pouring like wine right in front of me, and I just got up and left the room and I didn't say anything. But afterwards I said, you know, can you maybe be a bit more mindful of that, because it was almost like it was in front of my face. But equally, I was aware that it's not her problem, my wife, that is, it's not her problem. But the other interesting thing is that since I've stopped, she's gone back to her normal drinking, which is very, very moderate. And it made me realise how much of a feeder I was, because I wanted a drink, every day, I used to say, oh, let's have a glass of wine just to justify my own drinking. And as you know, Janie, she's had cancer 3 times and alcohol in relation to cancer is terrible.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of riddled with guilt that I was doing that, you know. And now she's downloading an app, which I don't know the name of, but she puts a star on each day she doesn't drink. And she might only have a glass or two of wine a week now.
Yeah, great.
Which highlights what I was doing.
Yeah, no, it's really true. I think that, you know, we are all very different, and some people do have an off switch. You know, they aren't like you and me were. People have an off switch, but I think the most important thing, and I'm sure you found this at the beginning, was that with your partner, the most important thing to remember is that this is your thing. It's not their thing. It's not their thing. And so, and actually, I now advise people to not even necessarily discuss it in depth with them. I know that seems a little bit odd because you want to be very open with your partner about everything, but this thing is so massive and so personal that you almost have to kind of mollycoddle it and kind of keep it to yourself, because it's so fragile at the beginning. And if you have too many discussions and debates with the person that you love most, you might end up sort of changing your mind, or that's not to say the other person will try and force you back into drinking, but it's just not the time to have debates and conversations when you're just feeling really fragile. Far better to just literally focus on, you know, just actually be, in inverted commas, selfish, because it's your thing and you have to do it. You have to protect yourself. And if that means saying, no, I don't want to go somewhere, then maybe you have to say no.
Oh, you know what? That is perfectly said, actually, because you have to self-care. You have to look after what's right for you.
Yeah.
And quite often I say to people that if there's a single element of doubt in being asked to a party or the pub or for a meal, just say, no, I won't go on this occasion. Thanks, but maybe next time. Because if there's a risk of you compromising what you're trying to do, it's not worth it, is it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm. It's non-negotiable, isn't it?
Yeah.
So anyways, now you are amazing 20 months down the line, and you've really built up this incredible following of people who just, I think people just really resonate with your you know, approach, very no nonsense, of course. And so obviously that's led to you doing, you know, all kinds of stuff within this scene. So tell us about what you're up to now.
Well, I've got an interesting one, actually, which will surprise you. I've been asked as a guest to appear on Meg's Menopause Conference.
Oh, wow. And
it was meant to be in June, but because of lockdown. There's some amazing guests there, and a lot of people say, well, how have you winged that one? But I met Meg at...
Are you talking about Meg Matthews?
Yeah. I met Meg at her private podcast, live podcast, and she was talking about the menopause, and I said, is there any support for partners? And she said, that's interesting. And then 2 or 3 days later, I got an email saying, would you like to be a guest at our conference?
So fantastic. And
because Meg's sober as well. But the interesting point there was, because my wife had cancer, it was a hormonal cancer, so her drug treatment threw her into the menopause, but I was drinking then. So when I gave up drinking, I was a lot more present for her, where before she was going through all this physical and emotional stuff that she didn't understand, and I was away with the fairies, you know?
Yeah.
So it's an interesting perspective. So I've been asked to do that. Of course, my coaching that I'm doing now, which I love, lots of writing, podcasts, thank you for asking me. I just love this whole sober scene. It's just so exciting, you know. When my inbox goes, it's like, oh, what next, you know, rather than waking up feeling negative from the start. And as you know, Janie, you've got that voice in your head all the time nagging away at you, like, oh, I drank too much. What did I say? Did I send that text? It just controls your whole life. And when you stop drinking, it all goes, doesn't it? It's just such a clear path.
Yeah, it's quite incredible how the anxiety levels change, isn't it? Really amazing. Great. Totally. So what else have you got going on then, Dave? You're doing this conference. That sounds amazing. Anything else you want to share with us?
Well, I was thinking about writing a book. But there's so many out there at the moment. So if I do anything like that, it will have to be different. So I need to find out what niche I want to do it in, because I just don't want to write just a a normal sobriety book. I want to come at it from a different angle, and I haven't quite worked that out yet. Just carrying on, really, Janie, you know, seeing what comes along. It's quite exciting, really, you know.
Yeah.
Different opportunities that land on your doorstep. And I'm trying to sort of move forward with this coaching thing, because I really, really enjoy that. And just enjoy life, really. Enjoy this new fact. I feel 10 years younger.
I know. Isn't that great?
It's so good. And I've recently bought a Peloton, and I've been going on that, and I've lost a bit of weight because I've put on a bit over lockdown.
Brilliant.
And I normally go on that early in the morning, say 5:30, because as you know, we always wake up early now because we're in bed by 9:00.
Yeah, exactly. sober rock and rollers, eh?
I know. But you'd be surprised how much that sets me up for the day.
Yeah, exactly.
Endorphin rush, you know.
Yeah,
so
fantastic.
Just enjoy life, really. Yeah.
Great. Well, it's so lovely to chat to you, Dave, and well done on everything. And send love to Em. And
I will do.
Hopefully, look
appreciate
forward to
you
seeing you soon.
Me as well. Yeah, start these socials up again.
Well, I mean, if anyone could do anything social, I would.
Yeah, but it happened.
Maybe it won't be long.
All right. Lovely
That'd
to talk
great.
To Jamie.
Take care, Dave. Thanks very much.
Bye. Cheers.
We definitely need to get some gigs in place. We need to get some more social stuff going on. I must tell you, by the way, in case I forget, that my Champneys retreat that I had lined up for June, which obviously didn't happen, has been rescheduled. And we do have some space. It will all be done properly. Champneys are open, and they assure me that everything is going to be done exactly how it should be. So it's Champneys in Tring, and it's going to be 3rd and 4th of October. It's just a one-night break, but man, do we pack a lot in. And of course, the facilities at Champneys are just absolutely beautiful. So if you can treat yourself, if that's something of interest to you, then check out the show notes, check out my website, thesoberclub.com, because I can't actually give you the exact link right now. I don't have the exact link to book, but it will be 3rd and 4th of October. It's Champneys Tring. It's called Self Care and Sobriety. So if you know you want to go and you want to secure your place, ring them up and ask them. But I'll put the link in the show notes as soon as I have it. And if you go to thesoberclub.com, it'll be under events there as soon as I have that link as well. I'm really looking forward to it. It's just going to be just so lovely to connect with people again. You get a chance to obviously use their facilities. We do some intensive sessions, which are suitable for anyone, by the way. It doesn't matter whether you are thinking of ditching the booze, you are in the early stages, or on the last one we had someone who'd been sober 6 years, because as with everything that I do with the Sober Club, it's really about what's next. It's about getting your mindset right. We look at NLP techniques and EFT and just scaling up, just looking at your mindset, finding your purpose, just all of that stuff. And so have a look at some of the testimonials. The last one was great fun. So 3rd and 4th of October, Champneys in Tring in Hertfordshire, self-care in sobriety. And I really, really hope some podcast listeners are able to make it. It'd be absolutely great to see you there. As promised, Wildlife Botanicals. My guest is Ellie Bradshaw, founder of Wildlife Botanicals in sunny Cornwall. I'm so jealous, Ellie. Lucky you. How amazing. Tell us a little bit about your background then and how you came to be the founder of this gorgeous, gorgeous brand. It's such a shame that this isn't telly because it looks so pretty. Just your boxes are so pretty.
Oh, thank you. Well, I guess my background has always been in luxury food and drink, and have a very privileged career in hospitality. So I think I can certainly say I've had a real passion for lovely food and wine. And basically, being a busy working mum, there's no Ubers in Cornwall, and very much always on mum taxi duty, and just really trying to, either if I was out of home, there was nothing really that I found that was dry in the kind of wine category, and probably being a bit of a bubbly kind of girl, I wanted that kind of sparkling wine. And I think just, again, didn't really want that sugary drink, elderflower pressade out, just bored of sparkling wine. And so what was there? Background also being in hospitality, where sometimes it's easier to kind of pour a glass of wine than it is to make a cup of tea. Probably of the generation of growing up with the wonderful Keith Floyd, Tuesdays were becoming the new Fridays, and cooking just like him. Suddenly there was a bit of a wake up call and said, right, well, you know, I want something that's low in alcohol, but it's got to taste great, and something that was restorative at the end of the day, rather than just, you know, wine that would deplete me. So that's my other passion, was very much about botanicals and plant power, and being a huge advocate for kind of herbal teas and kind of plant-based foods. Could I merge those two worlds and create something that was hopefully, you know, pretty special? And that's really probably my kind of light bulb moment, was, you know, pulling together then a crack team of experts. We onboarded Sarah. She was formerly the head of innovation at Innocent Drinks. We also had we had Jane, and her background was with Beringer Wines in California for 17 years. And then we also had a food scientist and master brewer. And last but not least was Rachel, who's our naturopath and medical herbalist, to help us choose which botanicals to put in. So that's how it was evolved.
Sounds amazing. It sounds like a lot of love has gone into the creation. Tell us about the ingredients then. What kind of ingredients do you have, and how do you work that out in terms of flavors?
Yeah, so, you know, it was always first and foremost, the core was always about the botanicals. And what we have done is that we have blended and created this magical kind of elixir. So we've got five fabulous botanicals, and that's lemon balm, there's damask rose, there's ashwagandha, rosemary and damiana. And if you wanted me to kind of just briefly kind of cover those, lemon balm is fantastic. It kind of lifts the spirits. It's an anxiolytic, sorry, so that's stress splitting.
Well, that's a good word. I love that word.
So it's great for gut health. So again, with wildlife being a wonderful kind of aperitif, so that's really kind of fantastic, supports good gut health and the digestive system. You've got damask rose. Now that's an anti-inflammatory. So used in clinic, if you've got a little bit of kind of like, you know, oh, a bit of lovesickness, or kind of just generally feeling just a little bit sad. It strengthens the heart. So that's
I always think of that as an essential oil for massage, actually.
Yeah, indeed. But it's also for ingesting, anti-inflammatory, and it's also mood boosting. So that's a natural mood booster. Ashwagandha, this is a real clever herb. So that's an adaptogen. So if you're feeling a little tired, it will give you a bit of a boost. But likewise, if you're feeling a little bit kind of stressed and you need to calm down, it will just naturally adjust to your body's requirements. Rosemary, very, very well documented in culinary terms about its benefits. Really, really rich in antioxidants, increases blood flow to the head. So you can remember wild nights for the right reason, is a lovely little thing. And then last but not least, within the botanicals, then we've got damiana, and that is a natural stimulant and aphrodisiac. It's also a tonic, an antidepressant. So it was, again, looking at all those negative things that alcohol brings to the table. How can we dial up and really kind of bring in the botanicals to make, you know, wildlife botanicals, in three words, bubbles with benefits.
I love that. And so in terms of the alcohol then, just explain what happens to that, and how, you know, just for anyone who's kind of new to all of this, the whole 0.5% thing can be so confusing.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that it is still a bit of a misnomer in the UK. So we are the only country in the world that does not classify 0.5% as alcohol free. So if we didn't produce this in Cornwall, then and overseas, we could use on our labels alcohol free. But let's just put that into perspective. 0.5% ABV, there's more alcohol sugars in an overripe banana or in, you know, a swig of cough medicine. So it is, you know, you can drink 20 glasses of wildlife to imbibe the same amount of alcohol, or you'd have to drink 20 glasses to imbibe the same amount of alcohol as one glass of wine. So I say that's kind of a lot of bubbles or one wild party. And how we remove the alcohol is very much part of our sustainability. There's three fundamental ways of removing alcohol from wine. Very often some producers will do by arresting the first fermentation in the bottle. What that does, Janie, is that it leaves very, very high residual sugars. So you're then, your result is it's quite viscous, but it's very super sweet, and just purely wasn't to my palate. I wanted that kind of, you know, real dry Sauvignon Blanc flavoured drink. Or then you can, through reverse osmosis, but then that actually stresses the wine. And then we discovered a way of doing it, which is a patented process, where you spin the wine through centrifugal spinning, very gentle, and just with a little bit of warmth, we're able to then evaporate the alcohol. That is then retained through the distillation process, so there's utterly no waste in wildlife. But furthermore, we're able to retain all the natural characteristics and the tannins and flavour profile of the base wine. So then we add the botanicals, and then we also have a further 8 vitamins and minerals. So you've got the full B suite of vitamins. And then we've also got zinc, which is fantastic for hair, skin and nails, and a supercharged vitamin C element as well.
Amazing. It's a super health elixir, isn't it, going on here?
It is. And it kind of straddles kind of different categories. It's kind of, you know, it's not a soft drink, but you can drink it freely. You don't have to, you know, have a licensed premises to sell it or enjoy it. But again, we wanted to work collaboratively with the wine industry. And, you know, we're not here to preach. We're just here to be a kind of a really great, refreshing, you know, bubbly drink when you don't want the alcohol for whatever reason.
Yeah. So, and as we've already said, you know, really gorgeous packaging. I mean, it really looks so pretty. The boxes are just gorgeous. And you've obviously put a lot of work into it. What's your aim for the brand, you know, in terms of where it's sold?
Well, firstly, thank you very much about the compliments, and I should be conveying my gratitude to our designer, Sarah Truella. And so again, being from Cornwall, born and bred, very, very passionate to kind of fly the flag. And Sarah, the local Cornish artist, and her, I was inspired really by her piece of artwork called Ecosystem. And we tried it on the front of the pack, on the front of the label. It was a little bit kind of too much, so we just took abstracts from that, and then on the inside of the back label, as you drink down through the bottle, then the whole of the ecosystem piece of artwork is revealed. So thank you, Sarah, for that. In terms of where we'd like wildlife to be, I think first and foremost, as easily to shop for the customer as possible. We have just launched with Harvey Nichols in London, and then we're doing a national rollout. Already, we're not even 12 months old, 33% of our sales is actually going internationally. So I think wherever there's alcoholic premium bubbles, then I would love wildlife to be there as that consumer choice.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know we can obviously have it, you know, as it is, but you have a couple of ideas as well for actually using it as a kind of cocktail without alcohol. So do you want to just give us one fairly simple recipe?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, you can do kind of wild Kia Royales.
Oh, that sounds lovely.
So just do a twist. You can get non-alcoholic creme de cassis. So there's kind of beautiful kind of blackcurrant liqueurs and syrups. And then just top it up with wildlife nude, I would think, was probably best for that.
We should just say you have the nude and you have blush as well.
Yes, so we've got the classic kind of white, and then we've also got a slightly fruitier, kind of lovely Provence pink grey blush.
Lovely.
So we have got lots of recipe ideas for different wild cocktails that are on our website, wildlifebotanicals.co.uk.
Yeah, perfect. I love that. Thank you so much, Ali. It's great to chat to you. It's a fabulous brand and I wish you all the best and much success. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jenny. Thank you.
Don't forget, we have some wildlife botanicals to give away on my website over at imperfectlynatural.com, but I'll put the link in the show notes for you. So make sure you enter some of these competitions because I've got some good stuff to win and you have to be in it before you can get a chance. And make sure you vote for them, by the way, as well in the Platinum Awards. Just you just got to go to the link that I'll pop in the show notes. And just vote for Wildlife Botanicals. That'd be fantastic if they can get your vote as well. Don't forget the Champneys thing, 3rd and 4th of October. Almost got the date wrong. And I'll see you same time next week when I'm hoping that I'll be able to bring you that interview with Jessica Huey. I actually did record it a while back, so it's not going to be relevant to lockdown. We're not really talking about what happens after lockdown. It's a more generic interview, but hopefully you'll really enjoy it. Oh, by the way, I meant to say as well, on the interview I did a couple of weeks ago with Heather Nickell, you might have spotted my deliberate mistake that you got a little extra bit that was recorded for Sober Club members, and I'm really pleased. It was really great. I did that in error, but hey, the best mistakes. So you got that little extra piece in there, and then I was on social media and I saw this fantastic review that someone had put on Heather Nickell's website about the podcast and just the amazing information that she'd given, because really was a ton of great stuff in there. So again, if you didn't listen to that podcast, go back and have a listen, because we really do a lot there about nutrition and about sleep and just all the stuff that you've really, all the basics that it's a really good idea to think about when you're in the early stages of ditching the booze, or indeed at any time when you know you want to scale everything up and live your best life and all of that. In the Sober Club, we are going to be doing a live masterclass with Rob Hobson on nutrition and sleep. So that's coming up in September. So if you've been thinking about joining, maybe now is a great time. You just need to go to thesoberclub.com. I'll see you same time next week. And if you're doing this hard thing, give yourself a massive hug. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.